Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We'll routine to board a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
All your transgressions, you receive the atomic bullet to the ass!
Good!
Oh boy, that sounded bad.
I've fallen and I can't get up!
Shazoo's the turtle! All right! she fills the terrible and the knights of the round table.
Oh, we know it. She's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn.
whiskey and I own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run, because when them old boys raised on shotguns, we say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello everybody, it's old King Shaziz the Terrible here. We're you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table, and I think we got a pretty interesting show coming up for you here, so stay tuned, because we got a lot of stuff to throw down the table. This is going to be like a buffet of stuff, man. You know, have you ever had the feeling somebody was watching you, you know? Like, you go out there and you surf the internet, and then you jump on TV and you see something you just looked up on the internet and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's almost like you're being digitally catered to, you know? And some of the things that they normally never talked about on the mainstream media, they're suddenly starting to talk to you about. Like, I just saw a news broadcast yesterday about alternative energy. And also I saw a newscast about some prepping, you know. And at first they were like, "Oh, these doomsday preppers are nuts," you know. They're preparing for grid going down. Well, now you got some pretty big figures on TV talking about, you know, what if the grid did go down? What would you need? And they're talking to this man, and he's telling them, you know, about canned goods and all these different things that, you know, if you prepare ahead of time, then you'll be all right. But if you don't prepare ahead of time, then you're essentially going to, you're not going to like the situation. So, you know, there's just like, it's amazing what's going on in this world. You know, you got weird things happening in the world. There's street can't even say it, street magicians nowadays that are doing these really amazing tricks that, shoot, by definition, with all these people standing around, you couldn't green screen this. These are live events taking place where these guys are actually doing just totally bizarre, out of the ordinary magic tricks, not like the old smoke and mirrors kind of stuff, and you got crowds of people standing around watching. So however you look at it, whether it's real or somehow or another, it was like a group of people who got together and faked this event or whatever. It's just psychologically mind-boggling if you look at it. Anyway, we're living in a really super exciting world, and what I'm seeing out there in the mainstream media, I'm seeing panic. I'm seeing these folks starting to get a little bit on the concern side because their ratings are dropping to the dirt because the alternative media, I mean, there's networks all over. Just here on Shaziz Radio, we broadcast out to multiple networks, and we've got other networks that are in conjunction with us, simulcasting and everything else. No Borders and Awake Radio's our close partners there, and We Roar and all them, and really good people in all those networks, and these networks are coming online on a daily basis, and they're starting to pool together. We've actually got a couple other networks that are coming in with us as well, and I can't think of the word that I'm trying to say there, but it's like a family kind of thing, you know. Everybody keeps their own website, everybody keeps their own network, and it's kind of like united we stand, but divided we fall kind of thing. So if one of these networks goes down, no sweat. They just jump on one of the other networks, and the show goes on. And I believe this is probably why a lot of our shows come under attack a lot of times. And, you know, somebody's trying to get into Skype or whatever. You know, we know folks is listening. And some of the folks listening, they don't really necessarily like what we got to say. But hey, that's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. It's about bringing positive solutions to the table, regardless of who likes it. And we've got a lot of amazing things going on. We started off with a little boat pop-up boat contest, and it escalated into some more advanced deals. And I'm physically going to build a full-size version of this little toy that was created back in, I think it was in the 20s, 1920s or whatever. Could have been back further than that. But a lot of good things are coming out of what we're doing here on these networks, and a lot of, like, the virtual labs deal. We actually got a guest on here today, too, that I'll let my friend Cultus introduce him and everybody else around the table. But I'm thinking, I listened to watch some of his videos and some of the things that he said, and he's got in his mind pretty much the same thing we got in our mind, and all these like minds coming together, brilliant minds from every nation out there in the world. We've got something incredible going on, and we need to keep the ball rolling, because like I said before, in my view, the mainstream media, the mainstream corporate governments and all that kind of stuff around the world, I think they're starting to get a bit on the nervous side. So with that said, let's see if we can introduce all the knights that we got here today. You want to go with that, Cultus?
Yeah, how are you, buddy? And how are you this week?
Oh, pretty good, I think.
That's the way. Well, this week we're joined again by Knight Diven. How you doing, buddy?
Hello.
Morning. That's the way, mate. And we're going to discuss this week about we will refer to it as the Gaza incident and what we intend to do to rectify that situation, yes?
Yeah, indeed.
Nice. And we're also joined here by to be knight Justin, who is the founder of JDC Products, and most of you will be familiar with his work on YouTube. He does a lot of HHO research, and recently has started to join the band of HCAT catalytic research. So I'm extremely interested in talking to him about that. So how are you this week, Justin?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
No worries, buddy. So
let's Justin,
just jump in, Shaziz.
So, Justin, did the show intro make you nervous, sir?
Not at all. I downloaded quite a few of the podcasts, and we did about a 12 or 13 hour trip up to Maryland to see my wife's family, and I listened to you guys the whole way on the podcast. No, I think it's hilarious.
That's great,
hilarious
man.
Stuff.
That's great. Well, man, I'm telling you, like I said, there's a lot of amazing things going on in the world, and on the Knights of the Round Table, we throw a lot of stuff down there. I think it was Dublin that asked about the doggone stuff going over there in Ukraine, and my personal view is, if you step back and look at the entire big picture, there's something major going on. There's destabilization in many nations, and somebody's behind all that. And so we could go on into a deep old conspiracy theory that would take us down a rabbit hole of epic proportions, but I'll just leave it at that for the moment. But one of the things that stands true in this whole deal is, if we do have a situation such as a some sort of mass chaos, war, whatever, a civil disobedience, or power grid start going down and all that kind of stuff, what you got at your house is going to be what you got. That's it. You know, maybe whatever your neighbors are willing to help you with. And so with that said, you need to be prepared in any kind of form or fashion that you can, food-wise, electric, medical, and all that kind of stuff. And I've been saying forever and a day, I mean, there is no energy crisis in the world. I mean, you can take water and you can burn water. You know, you can burn just about anything if you can atomize it. And so with that said, I'm fascinated with your research in HHO, and I've done a bit myself, and a lot of these researchers out here that you'll probably get to talk to via, cultists and the Knights of the Round Table and all that, they're pretty much in the same boat there as far as that goes. But, you want to tell people about what it is that you're working on?
Oh, sure. Well, essentially, I'm just I'm an alternative energy researcher, and I've gotten quite obsessed, I would say, with HHO and hydrogen. And it's for the simple fact that it's an easy technology to get into. Anybody can do it. And another thing is, I mean, you're creating your own fuel from water. It's just amazing to me. And this can be done very simply. And the price of solar is coming down. We could be using wind, newly designed wind turbines, to gain electricity to run our electrolysis units, and just pour simple water into the reservoirs and break it up, create hydrogen and oxygen, and store those gases or use them on demand. And for me, it's really the power densities you can get out of HHO gas or hydrogen and oxygen or water is just mind-boggling.
Oh, it's incredible.
Some of the stuff we could be doing with it. I think it's like of the utmost importance that, especially that version of it, that we do more research into it, and that's what I'm really working on. I've been trying to design solar hydrogen units, home-brewed ones, and fuel cells, and things like that, and try to put the information out there on sites like YouTube so everybody else could join in on it.
Well, I think that you're really going to like virtual labs. We've got a few links out here on ShazizRadio.com for virtual labs, but it's going to be a really amazing thing, because I feel like some of my ideas and some of your ideas combined could actually speed up the process and help you in your designs, as well as you might have a little bit of knowledge that you figured out a few things on your side that would speed up ours. Me, personally, I'm into plasma technology, which, is a whole different story, but all these things combined in conjunction with one another, like you mentioned there, using solar and wind to power the hydrogen cells. That's what I like to hear, because I think that instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, you use all the natural motions and resources around you to actually create your energy. So, you got water running down your downspout. You put a couple little turbines down there to catch some of that energy. There's all kinds of different ways, earth batteries, thermoelectrics, hydroelectrics, you know the whole spiel. You've been in alternative energy long enough. And so with that said, when we get virtual labs actually, online running 24/7, You'll be able to talk with other researchers in the same exact field, and there'll be multiple different categories. You know, if people's working on Tesla or Bedini or any of the other alternative energy devices out there, then you'll be able to have those people right there where you can real-time work side-by-side with these individuals, and whatever resources I might have in my lab that you need for your deal, I can post them over to you or vice versa. And so we can get this done, because the track record of the elite out there that continuously complain about this and that, you know, and the bogus global warming scam and all that kind of jazz, and instead of making anything happen, they just sit there and argue back and forth, bicker, and throw regulation after regulation that does nothing but hinder the whole process. Well, I'm saying that we, the people, just need to stand up and do it and not ask for permission to do it. We just need to design the stuff, put it out there in the market area or out there as open source, you know, whatever the person doing it chooses to do. It's, you know, it goes both ways. But what we've got here is a capability, an amazing possibility to actually put working devices out there, you know, and prove or disprove any other ones that come out there that may or may not work, you know. But I was also saying that there are anomalies in these other devices out there that, you know, they look good, they sound plausible, there is something going on there, but it's not necessarily free energy or over unity or the Holy Grail or anything right. like that. And some of them just flat out lies, you know. But in just about all these devices, there's one little thing, you know, like the lens effect or whatever. I'm interested in that one time that you got that anomaly from all these different devices. I want to know why that occurred. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I agree with you that the elitists, they sit around and twiddle their thumbs and they don't really. I mean, in my research, from where I'm coming from, I'm learning that institutions like NASA, a lot of the military, and this is not just for the United States, this is across the world. These people, they already have some of these technologies that we're trying to work on building ourselves. You know, they already have these plasma reactors. They already have the cold fusion or what we would call LENR reactors. They already have all the hydrogen stuff. It's just they've had this stuff since the 20s, 30s, and they've been studying it over 100 years. And there's absolutely no market. Consumer products out there on the market yet. I don't understand it. I really don't.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, it doesn't make you money.
Yeah, exactly right. It's a simple case of, you know, the end of the day, what is there that is 100% renewable, which HHO, as we both know, is 100% renewable. You've got water in, you've got your fuel, you've got your mechanical work, and then you've got water coming out the other end, which can be turned back into hydrogen, you know, and that's that to okay. them. That doesn't reap of money, you know. Whereas something like oil that we can say, oh, we're running out of, you need to pay more for it now.
Yeah, I agree. Man. It's crazy how it works out that way. But then, you know, especially in my research, I'm seeing that a small, simple solar hydrogen unit that came with the solar panel had the cell, had the bottling capabilities, everything there, just a small, simple solar hydrogen unit that could probably, you know, store enough gas to run a barbecue grill or a heater. Mm-hmm. This could be built and put on the market for less than the cost of a gaming console.
Yeah.
And it's like, where's the stuff at?
Well, yep. All these technologies, when you go up to do the average Joe and you say, hey, did you know you could run your car on water? They look at you cross-eyed. I mean, but I'm like, wait a second, you're looking at me like all cross-eyed and everything because I just said you could run your car on water, but didn't you pay attention in science class? Do you know what water is? You know, if you separate water into its separate elements, you've got hydrogen on one side and oxygen on the other side. And there is a reason why the fireman always told you never throw water on an electrical fire because you're going to get a hydrogen explosion. So with that said, you know you can burn water, right?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, how do they get space? I mean, how do we get into space? We use hydrogen. That's hydrogen. That's how we get into space.
Yep. And as I'm looking at this stuff even more, you know, I guess we'll get into the pop boat, how it can be used for that as well. But I'm also seeing that hydrogen plays a very, very important part in nuclear fission and nuclear fusion. And your HHO cells, your electrolysis cells, back in World War II, they were enriching uranium. They were also a simple nuclear fission reactor. They have uranium that's encased in a pool of heavy water, which is deuterium. And I started to find out that in World War II, they were actually using electrolysis cells to concentrate out deuterium. And so people just, they need to understand that what they're playing with when they're playing with these little electrolysis cells is pretty high-tech stuff. The cold fusion, the LENR research that's going on now, they're working with deuterium. And hydrogen has other isotopes, oxygen as well, but hydrogen has other isotopes, protium, deuterium, and tritium. And tritium is a radioactive isotope, which is used in not only fission reactors, but thermonuclear weapons as well. But these isotopes can be concentrated out just by using an electrolysis cell. And something that we had stumbled upon, I was looking to build this solar hydrogen unit, and I was looking for a way to purify the hydrogen gas coming out of it. And I realized that an automobile catalytic converter could be used because there were metals in it, platinum and palladium. And those same metals could also be used to build homebrew fuel cells. What a fuel cell does is it essentially takes the hydrogen and oxygen gas, and through this noble metal, it recombines them back into water. Well, that creates clean water, it creates electricity, it also creates heat. And we started doing some experiments maybe about a month or two ago with basically injecting HHO gas into an automobile catalytic converter. And more or less the experiments were to see if I could purify the gas. Well, we were getting water out of pure water out of this. We need to test it and see how pure it is, but we also saw a massive quantity of heat coming off this thing.
Yep.
Because of flashback, we have no idea what the max temperature is, but I've got the internals of this catalytic converter up to about 1,200 or 1,300 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, them catalytic converters are amazing because if you just think about what a catalytic converter is, it's actually a fraud on people out there that are paying for fuel, because what a catalytic converter does is essentially it's a reburner. It reburns whatever fuel that doesn't get burned in the combustion. And so with that said, that's why you're getting the incredible heat. I mean, those things are high tech as heck.
Exactly. And that simple fact there tells you that the internal combustion engine is a waste bucket. They just send fuel straight out the exhaust, and it's sending these converters to be basically burned up. It's amazing how wasteful and they do it on purpose.
Yep.
It's like, you know, you wouldn't even need, if you were burning hydrogen in that car, you wouldn't need the catalytic converter at all. You wouldn't need emissions testing. Some states do, some states don't. But here in my state, we actually have to pay for emissions testing. We got no other choice, you know. It's so stupid, but it's
yeah, but my thing, recently, even if they were to not shift over to hydrogen, even if they were to just take and make that doggone car efficient, you know, for one thing, we all know that if you take a fuel, if you squirt it in a jet, it's not going to be as efficient as if you atomize that and put it in a super fine mist. So those things could be tuned to the extent that the majority of every bit of that fuel would get burned up in the combustion, but that's not going to happen And that's why you have to have the catalytic converter on there to reburn the excess fuel. So there is so much waste going on in the internal combustion engine. It's just ludicrous. But I'm with you. You should just go straight to hydrogen because it's a better fuel. It's a cleaner fuel right out of the gate.
Oh, exactly. It's just, it's pretty amazing. We've been doing the experiments and we've been talking that this is so important that it's possible in the near future you go to a car lot and say, all I want is the catalytic converter. You can keep the rest of the junk. Well, speaking of which, the pop-pop boat, a full-size version, you're going to need an extensive heat source for that. And we were thinking that this catalytic combustion of HHO, if we can get it tamed, it would be the perfect candidate for it. You're essentially riding, you're floating on your fuel.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And off of just a liter per minute of gas, which is about 200 watts of power, inside of this catalytic converter, we're able to get 1,000 degrees maybe even more. And what we were thinking was basically, and as we got more into this, or as I did, I started to realize that this is the exact same thing as the cold fusion, the LENR research that's going on. Everybody knows about Andrea Rossi and the ECAT. And I went back to his old stuff, and it looked like he started out with a catalytic converter. And actually, we found documents where they were suggesting that LENR or nuclear, you know, reactions were going on inside of a catalytic converter. It was the reason why your engine can be 400 or 500 degrees and your exhaust can be, you know, up to a couple thousand degrees. But we were saying that you just essentially bore a hole in the middle of this catalytic converter and you just push a water pipe through it and you seal up the outside of it, you insulate it, and you send gas in through it on demand. And if you've got, you know, a section of half inch or 3/4 inch copper pipe going through that catalytic converter, and you've got the inside of that thing at, you know, 1,000-1,500 degrees, as soon as water, cold water flows through that pipe, it's going to flash it to steam, no doubt about it.
And one thing good about the catalytic converter as well is they hold heat for a long time. One example is, you know, back in the old days, I used to scrap metal all the time, and I knew what was worth what, and I knew catalytic converters were worth a few bucks. And so I'm tooling down the road, and I'm in a hurry, and I look over off the side of the road there, and somebody had lost their catalytic converter on the side of the road. And I'm like, well, I don't really have time to pick that up, but I'll grab it on my way back. And so I was gone for an hour. And on my way back, I reached down here to grab that sucker, and I'm telling you what, it was still freaking hot.
They'll hold heat, and they're really heavy duty. They're surrounded by like 1/8 inch thick stainless steel. We were looking to use it as a I'm looking to work with it as a forced air heater, but as far as the pop-pop boat goes, it would be perfect because not only could you enclose that whole thing up, it would be a flameless reaction, and so it would be a lot safer than having a boiler there with the flame attached to it, whether it be, you know, coal or some type of fuel. It would be a lot cleaner than that, and if possible, you could create an on-demand one and run the thing just on demand, or you could take solar and stick it on the boat somehow, and as it's sitting there on the dock, it can be sitting there producing its own fuel.
Yeah, we
using the water.
We had touched on that yesterday about putting, you know, making it high tech and throwing hydrogen in there, but we didn't really go into depth. But you're thinking along the same exact lines that I'm thinking. You could put, you know, a little battery bank down inside there, so whenever it ain't, you know, when you're not using it, it's charging up. But there's also the capabilities of tapping into some of that thermal energy as well, and using that once you get it started to actually produce even more energy that you can put back in that battery as well.
Exactly, and when you get into these cold fusion and LENR research that's going on, you realize that they're actually, the hydrogen is not even being used up. It's they're pumping in very small amounts of the gas, and they're usually under vacuum or pressurized systems. These are the gas reactors. But and it's the same thing with some of the plasma reactors. You got the hydrogen plasma reactors too. And so the technology, all of these technologies are kind of interrelated.
Well, but, personally, on the plasma reaction portion of there, I'm sticking with the noble gases because a hydrogen plasma reactor scares the crap out of me.
it does most people. I agree. hydrogen is some powerful stuff, I can tell you that, especially when it's mixed with pure oxygen.
Brown gas.
It would be amazing if it's something that you can just produce a small amount using a solar panel and send this into this home-brewed, one of the funny comments was it was called a hillbilly reactor. And so if you could just pump in a small amount and seal the thing up, I mean, you might have enough fuel there for, you know, 6 months to a year of ride time through that. It's pretty amazing stuff.
Well, I want to ask you something, and it's going to kind of sound kind of crazy, but I'm going to ask it anyway. In your normal hydrogen cell, like I built me a little hydrogen torch. I did a video sometime about it and showed the flashback that I kept getting because I couldn't get my flashback arrestor to stop the flashback on her. But anyway, that thing gets hot. The hydrogen cell gets hot because you're drawing a lot of amps from that battery. But I believe that if you find the right frequency of, I think you can do this with straight high voltage, do the same process that you're doing without drawing near as much amps. What do you think about that?
Well, you can. See, what I do is I'm with what we call brute force, which is basically current, is what you use to break the water up. Now, high voltage can be used, but at the present moment, openly, I haven't seen much as far as, let's say you got 100 volts at 1 amp and you have 10 amps at 10 volts. As far as from what I've seen so far, even with the high voltage and with the frequency manipulation and generation, I haven't seen a vast difference in gas production. The one thing I can say about using high voltage is you don't need the amount of electrolyte, the caustic electrolyte, like sodium hydroxide or potassium hydroxide, that you would need in a high voltage or low voltage scenario. Now, a lot of people are working on that, different ways to try to resonate the cell, and so to speak, where you could just tap it with a high voltage pulse and fracture the water that way. You can also use radio waves to break up the water, although I haven't seen anybody openly replicate that. But to me, there's a lot of potential out there. It's just a matter of seeing something that's legit. There's a lot of work being done with the high voltage electrolysis, but
Two things real quick is first off, on your electrolyte portion, have you tried using carbonated water, seltzer water?
I have not, actually.
I've got some amazing results with that. I just went and bought a 79-cent bottle of Always Save seltzer water, carbonated water. And I got some really amazing results on that. But I need to do a video because I took my 20 kilovolt oil burner igniter and I put it down in just straight tap water. And the plasma effect that was built up in that water was incredible. You could literally sit there and hear that water just popping all the heck. I had one straight to ground and one straight to one leg of the oil burner igniter. And I was getting some pretty scary results out of that deal.
That's pretty amazing. I'll have to try that. That's neat.
What about sound? Have you looked into any of the sonoluminescent stuff?
I've looked into it a little bit, the sonoluminescence. That's pretty interesting as well. I think, sound is another, as I was saying, that we're using radio waves or microwaves one to try to break the water up. And some of the stuff I've heard about the ancient pyramids also may have used sound frequency for splitting the water up as well. There's all sorts of things, but even with just the standard brute force, the easy stuff, just, you know, a 12-volt battery and some stainless steel through in there, I think you can do some amazing stuff with the gas as well. It's just... the thing I'm seeing is just nobody's doing anything with the gas that they're producing.
Coltus had a spectacular idea here, a couple shows back, where he was talking about they have these, I don't remember who told him about it, they're little fog machines. You know what I'm talking about, Coltus?
Yep, the piezoelectric, what are they called now? Little ultrasonic atomizers you see in like water features and stuff like that, it creates little clouds of smoke.
Yeah, and so with that said, if you get the electrolysis portion right on that deal right there, I mean, if you put some, you can try this for yourself. If you get regular coffee mate right out of the doggone can, you know, that you get put in your coffee and all that powdery stuff, you can sit there and sprinkle that over a Bic lighter and you'll get a flame. You know, that's one of the reasons why they tell you when you go into a grain bin, because of all the dust, you don't want to light nothing up because of the explosion. So if you atomize anything, it'll burn easier. So our thought on this deal was, if you take this deal to basically turn the water into a super fine mist and then hit that with some high voltage, you could create a you know, combustion out of the deal. What do you think?
I've actually seen a few experiments of they were actually doing that with a spark plug. They were shooting atomized water up to it. Had some high voltage probes doing that as well, and it's actually possible. As far as the internal combustion engine goes, we were talking, because this catalytic combustion, you can create a flame with the gas without any spark at all, and so we were talking about replacing the piston with a. It would be expensive with a solid palladium piston, and then you use a gas injector and inject the gas straight into the cylinder, and when the palladium piston hits that gas, it automatically just ignites.
From what I'm hearing you say there, it sounds kind of like the way that a diesel engine works. A lot of people don't understand that a diesel engine doesn't have spark plugs. It has glow plugs, and initially the glow plugs are just used to heat up the cylinder. Once the cylinder gets hot, it begins to burn the atomized fuel inside there, and it's not like an explosion. It's more like a heat expansion, but the hotter it gets, the better it runs. And so basically what you're saying, you could save a lot on power-wise, because you wouldn't have to have, you know, the spark plug per se, other than maybe just to get it initiated. Am I wrong?
Correct. You really wouldn't need any type of a heat source or any spark plug or glow plug or anything. It's just they actually have NASA builds propulsion systems out of this stuff. They have a high pressure. NASA does this stuff on a daily basis. They got some amazing technology that they haven't given to us, but they actually have high pressure electrolysis cells that basically run off of solar or whatever electricity they can get, and it breaks the water up and puts it in a high pressure vessel, and then it'll send it to a palladium fuel jet, and no moving parts, nothing, no spark ignition, nothing. It just sends the high pressure gas to a palladium propulsion jet, shoots it out the other end, and it's a propulsion system. It's really simple stuff, and you just have to have those noble metals. Like palladium actually works the best, but supposedly platinum will also work. But as far as HHO goes, a lot of people are working with the Stanley and Myers tech trying to get a car to run on water. And when I first got into it, I was all about the Stanley and Myers tech. Now I see it as maybe it's the water car is really complex. And first of all, you're trying to make an inefficient beast run off of water, and you just personally, I think the whole combustion engine should be redesigned.
Oh, I agree.
To work from this gas, because you're working with a implosion and an explosion. It's a different. It burns so much different than any other fuel on the planet.
Well, does anybody disagree that electric motors have a lot more torque than a regular combustion motor?
Especially those 3D printed ones. Has anyone seen those?
Reprinted?
Yeah, we were talking about them just the other day. I'll see if I can find a link floating around. But essentially what you've got is a... Your coils, or they're not even really coils, but there's a circuit board that's printed out with a 3D printer, and the stator is just a magnet. And these things, they're actually designing them to go into the hubs of car wheels and stuff like this at the present moment to try and develop something there. And they've got an incredible amount of torque, apparently. So it'll be very interesting to see where all of that leads.
Well, if I was...
Yeah, now I think as far as the electric car goes, I really do... I think the future is going to be electric, and even with the hydrogen stuff, you're talking about fuel cells that you can use to power those electric motors. But
yeah, I was thinking more about the storage than anything else. The storage is kind of the complexity of trying to having the fuel on demand.
I don't think we should store it. I like the fuel on demand, like you just said. But what was coming to mind, the reason why I had mentioned about the torque in the electric vehicles, is that if you made a hydrogen hybrid and you only use the hydrogen portion to run a generating system that actually runs these doggone motors, man, you could get a car that would be so super inefficient, it'd be just sickening.
Yeah. Well, if money wasn't such a big factor, you could also, this breakthrough technology in graphene and nano layer technology, like supercapacitors that have incredible storage and they still have the cranking amp capability that obviously we're not going to see for years down the line because maybe military installations have it and they're in military use, but it's incredibly expensive for the average consumer to try to get something like a supercapacitor.
Yeah, for those of you out there who don't think capacitors could do the job, try a little experiment. Go out there and get you like a 500 or 800 microfarad capacitor and charge that puppy up and put a hot dog on a stick and then touch that sucker and see what goes on. You'll blow that hot dog right off that stick. Tell me, I know I've seen some explosions in my lab. You don't touch one of those with your finger.
One thing I wanted to just draw us back to was the Stan Meyer tech and how, because you pretty much we've spoken about every part that he's used, but not sort of pointed out how he used it all. Stan Meyer's, from what I understand, and discussions with Russ Grease, we should all be familiar with Russ. He used RF frequency, high voltage, and a certain frequency of laser to be able to disturb the water. So I do wonder if there is something to the high voltage side of things, but only if you incorporate a number of different angles to disrupt the wavelength of the water molecule. Well, what do you think of that, Jason?
I think that there is something to the Stan Meyer's tech, only that it's very complicated.
Yeah.
And the Stan Meyer stuff has been something that has sort of taken over. There's a lot of experimenters out there that I know personally that have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of man hours have been put in on this, and none of us have really seen anything, really usable, I guess.
Well, I'm a liking.
And,
I'm a liking what you said about the catalytic converter and the pop boat. Now we took a simple little toy, just a little steam boat that you put a candle under and it goes. We took that simple toy, and in the time that we've been doing this deal right here, this thing has escalated into a high tech solid state engine with no moving parts that runs on the water that you are floating on. And
That's the thing with this technology is when I got into it, everybody seems to be running before they even learn to crawl. And so I looked at it like a lot of these people that were really involved in the Stan Meyer stuff, that they were spending years and all this money on this technology, and at the same time, there were simple things that they could be doing, just like what I'm trying to develop is just simple solar hydrogen storage units. You know, that they had kilowatts upon kilowatts upon kilowatts of power coming to their house in the form of wind and the sun, and they didn't do anything with it. And that's what I'm trying to, you know, Stan Meyer, if you watch a lot of his videos over the years, from way back when, he always said, KISS, keep it simple, stupid.
Yep.
And sometimes you have to go back to that, and you have to keep the stuff simple. And this catalytic combustion process, it's very simple. It's really easy to do. And right now it seems like it's going to yield quite a bit of heat. And I got into it for the heating aspect, and it seems to me that the only heaters that have ever been built by NASA, they were building 30, 40, 50 kilowatt catalytic heaters to be used in the space program. And at the same time, there's absolutely zero consumer products out there based on this technology. It's just, it's really simple. And I think that it has the power density to power this pop-pop boat. I really do.
I believe you. And the biggest money drainer in everybody's budget out there, and I'm sure y'all agree, is the heating portion. Whether you're using fossil fuels or whether you're using straight electricity, it's going to drain your pocket fast. And I'm thinking with that technology right there, you could build a super efficient heater that you could not only heat your house with, but actually generate some electricity while you're doing it. If you redesign the engine, take the whole engine and shove it off to the side, we already know what a combustion engine can do, and we know what it can't do. If you redesign that engine, make a simpler engine, and turn around and use all these things. When I did the video about pumping water, I was getting three things going on there. I was pumping water, plus I was generating heat, plus I was generating electricity. And all that came from that stupid little toy. And everybody's like, well, what's the pop-pop boat got to do with anything? Well, what it's got to do with anything is that simple science right there led into some really amazing ideas. And that's the reason why when I picked that little boat up and it was in my hand, I'm saying, all right, right here's the key, man. The things that's going on in this little bitty piece of science can be added on. By itself, maybe you can't get it to do what it is. Dublin, he was talking to me about math and scaling it up, and it couldn't be scaled up because of this or that. You know, it just doesn't work out mathematically. But I added something to it. I added what the catalytic converter did to it, and I was when I was heating the thing is, what I did was I took a coil of my tubing and I run it down into some solder that I had melted down into the thing. And so now, while you're heating it, it's heating up that solder, and that solder holds heat in, and it gives me more for my money, so to speak. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah. As human beings, we're extremely wasteful with byproducts. So, you know, like, heat is probably number one. In everything, we waste the heat. Heat is energy. We can convert that into usable energy to use it again. As we were just pointing out with the catalytic converter, that thing just burns off unused fuel rather than trying to cycle it back through the engine. You know, this is something we've got to sort of pay attention to and try and work with and try to get things more efficient, really, eh?
Well, if you take the thermos, just your average coffee thermos, you put coffee in that thermos, like especially the old style that were like encased, they had a little glass tubing inside there. You put your coffee in there, hours later that coffee's just as hot as you took it out of the pot. And so by designing these doggone thing just right to where you don't have air that's cooling this sucker down, you know, because anything open to the air is going to have some sort of cooling and waste effect going on. There's ways by which we could design this thing using little bits like the thermos and the catalytic converter and the little pop-pop boat itself, that this sucker would be incredible. Anybody disagree with
solar
that?
Solar heaters. Not at all. And there's solar heaters too. Like they use, you know, infrared radiation from the sun, and you can just take some aluminum cans and, you know, spray paint in black, so all the energy is directed inwards towards the copper piping, and have copper piping running through the whole thing. It's just basically a box that is insulated really well and just collects solar energy, you know, infrared in particular, and heat, and traps it in there, and you have a you know, a water solar heater. I don't know if you guys have ever seen those.
Proof of what you just said is the first time I ever sat on a car tire in the middle of the summer was in the middle of the night. This truck had been driving around. It was hotter than heck out. It was middle of July, and all day long this tire had been in the back of that doggone truck. And the sun went down, and I jumped in there with my shorts on, sat down on that rubber tire, and burnt my biscuits. Boy, you hear me screaming a mile away. So I said, hey, Eureka, there's something to that.
Yeah, that's a, I mean, you can incorporate that in a smaller design and then do, you know, the water pumping like you're doing with the pop-up boats as well. You know, you're basically essentially pumping water from cold to hot and back to cold again, and you can incorporate all those, kind of a holistic look at technology and efficient use of all the different transitional states of energy, because, you know, energy is always changing into different transitional states. So,
well, on that, and you don't even have to worry about cooling the doggone thing down. You don't have to worry about getting it too hot. So with that said, you won't have to worry about keeping too much heat to it. Because you don't have to have a water pump like in the car, you know, with a water jacket cooling the motor down. This you're cooling it down with your fuel.
It would be a boat if it can be built correctly. It would probably be a boat that would be faster than any boat on the water, and it would last 3 or 4 lifetimes. There would be hardly no moving parts on it. It would cost a fraction of what the boats nowadays cost. It would be pretty amazing if we could get the technology implemented into it to make it an actual working boat.
Also, yeah, you wouldn't
maintenance would be almost non-existent.
Also, you wouldn't need any rudder, because you could actually put the motor and the pipes on a swivel. You know, you could build it into a system to where you could actually turn that motor while it's running and use it just like a doggone jet ski, man.
Exactly.
Now, this all came from a pop-pop boat, so the guy in the chat room who commented, what's a pop-pop boat got to do with it? That's what it's got to do with it. That little bit of basic science right there, this is what I've been trying to point out in my mad science show for the last God knows how long we've been doing it. But I've been trying to say, you know, there is no energy crisis out there. I mean, it's all a farce, because if you take just the basic science, you use all this stuff in conjunction with one another, you would be amazed what you come up with. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, we've got an education crisis on our hands more so.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, we've been discussing laser hackers, atmospheric motor. You know, where he essentially takes his little quadcopter and a thin copper wire, and he flies his little quadcopter up in the air, connects the other end of the copper wire into his 3D printed atmospheric static motor, and the other end of the motor straight into a ground rod, and this thing goes crazy. And I've seen some torque tests he's done with this motor, where he gets a D-sized battery cell on a piece of string, and this thing winds it up, picks it up, flips it over, and continues. Like, you know, as far as static motors go, a D-sized battery is a fair load.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
Scale it up.
That's not light. Yeah, exactly right. So what if we had several aerials, you know, or let's go a step further to some technology that I saw once on the internet, and I have never, ever been able to find the link again. And this particular gentleman back in Tesla's day, pretty much, it was back in like the 1920s, 1930s, made up some foil balloons. So essentially some aluminium foil balloons. And he put little needles, because the static energy is attracted to the smallest point like that, to a nice needle tip. And he coated them in radium, and he sent these up into the sky full of helium. and he had a field full of these. You know, he may have had 50 or 100 of these balloons, and he was getting like 50 kilowatts down from the atmosphere.
The Moray? You talking about Moray?
I don't know. To be honest, as I said, I saw it the once, and I quickly read over, and I thought, well, that's really interesting. And every single time I've gone back to find that link, I've never, ever been able to find it. I've never been able to find that information again. But I know what I saw. I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't hallucinating that day. That definitely was something that, you know, obviously at some stage had happened. And, you know, as I said, can never find it again. But watching Laser Saber with... Laser Hacker with his electrostatic motor there, I'm reminded of it, and I'm like, well, yeah, so the air, the atmosphere around us that we breathe is what they call a dielectric. Now, all you boys know what a dielectric is, but just for our listeners, a dielectric is basically an insulator, all right? So the reason why we don't have constant lightning coming down even on a clear day, because energy exists up in the upper atmosphere 24/7, whether there's rain clouds or not. It's the movement of rain clouds and the water particles that generate exasperates the energy to such a point that it can break through the dielectric to find its way to ground, because that's how potential difference works, and that's how electricity moves through a circuit. Alright, so literally, if you send a wire up there, like they do these tests where they get a little model rocket, and they get some really fine copper wire, and they launch this this model rocket up into the sky, and when it gets high enough, a lightning bolt comes straight back down that copper wire, because you've broken the dielectric, you've given it a path to ground. That energy is always there, no matter what the conditions of the day, you know. And laser hacker proves that point. He has a nice, clear, sunny day. There's not a cloud in the sky. He flies this quadcopter up, and his little motor starts spinning around. And this is actually something, when I get to the US in March, will be something I'm going to endeavour to recreate myself. And yeah, we're certainly going to get a decent look into that and see exactly what's going on. So,
on lightning, yeah. Somebody once asked me, or told me, he said, you know, if you could... if you could contain a bolt of lightning, could you imagine how much power that thing had? Well, Tesla showed everybody how to basically get lightning. You know, he tamed lightning. That's coming out of the top load of the toroid. You know, it's doing exactly the same process that you're talking about, getting the energy out of the air. Now, to contain lightning, that's why I like the whole plasma reaction, because with the noble gas, you don't have to worry about, like, the hydrogen plasma, because it scares the crap out of me. I don't want to... like blow my face off while I'm trying to create a plasma reaction. But essentially what's going on inside that reactor, because of the molecules, I'm putting a positive charge inside there, and I'm baiting the electrons up out of the earth, and I'm holding inside a vacuum a bolt of lightning. I mean, you can see it in the videos that I've done on my plasma reactor. There is literally a bolt of lightning inside that doggone reactor. Now, there's the proof of concept right there. Tesla showed how to generate lightning, and many people's done other deals like you're talking about, and they used to take and put a stake in the ground, and they would send a thin wire up via a rocket and basically shorten that gap that the energy's created up there in the upper atmosphere, and that positive charge would zap right straight down that to ground, and they were creating man-made lightning. So you
guys are all familiar with a lightning rod?
Yep.
What's that?
Yeah, right? Right? Now, a lot of people are confused about what a lightning rod actually does. I'm pretty sure all you boys will understand. But a lightning rod actually isn't there to be struck by lightning. And what it does is it discharges the atmosphere before it has a chance to build up enough charge to break through the atmospheric dielectric and make its way to ground. So effectively, we're already, and this is back to the wasteful nature of human beings, we're already doing exactly what Laser Hacker's doing with lightning rods, except instead of having a gap there and, like, I don't know, putting some sort of motor or you know, something to do useful work, or even a large condenser bank or capacitor bank in the way and charging them up, we just run that atmospheric energy straight into the ground and waste it, just totally dissipate it and getting rid of it. But it's there. It exists already. We're already doing it. Just
What I would like to see
without the lightning bolt.
What I'd like to see, and this is truly mad science, is I would like to see somebody take and put a couple huge stainless steel plates in their pond and run one of them to the ground and one of them up to a really tall lightning rod, and then put a camera out there and run like hell. Could you imagine what that sucker would do when he got hit by a bolt of lightning, how fast that electrolysis would light that pond up?
Yeah, well, it's extremely high amount of volts, but I think the debate's still out on how much amplitude is there in current, because it's so quick, you know, it strikes so quick, but it does have megajoules of of energy.
It all comes down to watts, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a big misconception, is we use amperage as a means of measurement, and it's almost like separating what the electricity, its full potential. And if efficiency is key, if you can smooth out that lightning bolt and, bring that the high voltages at a certain resonant frequency, and you can slowly pace it, and slow it down in a way.
Well, this
and
is how
you store it, and you could store it in the Earth's natural capacitor, just finding the right resonance, whether it be the Schumann frequency or whatever it may be, although that's kind of dangerous stuff, but,
Well, lightning.
You can go for your life unless you've got 27,000 kilometers worth of wire to do something with it.
Well, lightning.
We did the math. That's if you want to build a Tesla coil that's going to resonate at the Schumann resonance, you need 27,000 kilometers of wire.
Well, lightning through sand creates glass. They call it a fulgurite, and so there's a lot of power there if you can turn sand into glass.
That's very much true. But I guess what I was saying is we separate the amperage and the voltage into two separate categories when really they could potentially be. There's still so little understood about electron and separating the electron. The whole Higgs boson, the boson pairs, and all that kind of stuff. It's difficult to say that. Amplitude isn't just a means of environmental vibration, like the energy, the voltage is going through the environment, creating different types of energy according to transition in the environment, It's kind of a perception to environment type of way to look at it. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, one of the things I think, if I'm wrong, I heard on one of Justin's videos was getting back down to education. I maybe it was a different video, but anyway, one of the things that bothers me the most, and I had this happen to me on one of my videos about the plasma reactor. This one science lady, she subscribes to my Mad Science channel. Well, I guess she does it for kicks because I make her laugh because. She put a doggone comment on there about there's absolutely no physics involved in my plasma reactor and, basically, kind of mocked what I was saying because in her mind, there's only one way to do things because that's the way she was taught in school. And I'm a firm believer that the laws of physics are not written in stone. Everything out there, no matter what you say in science, is a theory because, like, when you got into talking about the Higgs boson, I started thinking down along, if you start going down into inner space, like, looking underneath a microscope, and the deeper you look, you get to a point where suddenly everything from the laws of physics doesn't apply anymore. You're now talking about quantum physics, where things are just appearing and disappearing, at random.
According to perception.
Yeah.
According to perception. I mean, in a sense, like, the static field or voltage could ascend. I mean, this is pretty out there, but it could, in a sense, be like consciousness. I mean, our brain operates the same way, and we send electrical impulses, although they be through chemical, they're still, electrical impulses nonetheless, and it could just be that the whole electric universe type of theory. But I think that what you were touching on is like the idea of pseudoscience, and, that's kind of ego-laden way to look at something when somebody's really attached to what they've learned and it's like a elitist type of approach or entitlement, like, I went to school, I know what I'm talking about, you don't type of thing. I think that's kind of a more underlying principle of why we're having so many problems, you know, with our monetary system. The Edison syndrome, exactly. Trying to patent everything, and
my point,
everything gets locked up in bureaucracy. And
my point is this:
I'm always trying to point out there is everything we know today in science, when it's referred to as a theory, like this science theory, this whatever, it's exactly that. Think about the word theory; it's someone's best guess at what they think is going on. It's not necessarily fact, and any one of us can turn around and come up with a totally different idea, and guess what? We've got a scientific theory.
Well, my point was leading back around to something Justin said about KISS, you know, keep it simple, stupid, was we took a simple toy, and we escalated that all the way up to running hydrogen, to being the fastest boat, and you could actually steer it using the motor itself. And so I'm saying, if these guys are so freaking educated from their college degrees and everything, why isn't it they haven't come up with these simple ideas, a solid-state motor that will have no moving parts but run better than one that's going to break down after you don't put enough oil in the doggone thing? You see where I'm coming from?
That's money. They gotta make their money, you know?
Am I crazy?
I agree, and it's funny to me, but it also saddens me that these people will attack you, or they try to belittle you with their education and their what I call it indoctrinated education background. But at the end of the day, they're getting in the same car we are and pumping gas into it, and they're paying the electric bill every month. And so they must not know too much if they're still doing the same exact thing we've always done.
Yeah, they should be rooting for guys like us, man. They should be like, exactly. Yeah, support them. You know,
well, unless there's money involved, then they don't want to root for the alternative energy. They'll lose. They stand to lose a lot. You know, then it's about letting go of things. You know, and the whole Western, you know, mentality of. Survival of the fittest, meaning, you know.
Well, it's not just that.
The strongest.
It's not just that. It's globally, man. These guys from all different nations. It's globally. Every time a good idea comes on the scene, you go back to Henry Ford, and I can't remember what the total calculation, but somebody told me that he was able to get 100 miles to the gallon out of the first carburetor that he put in the doggone thing. Somebody along the line had to say, hey, you know, if you make a car that'll run 100 miles to the gallon, I'm not going to get very much money out of this tank of oil that I got over here. So is there any way we can, you know, tune it back a hair, you know?
Screw the population.
Yeah.
Who cares about that nature thing? It doesn't sound like it does anything for us.
Because,
Henry Ford's a good example. I think it was 1947, 48. I mean, he made an entire hemp car. I mean, the whole thing ran off of
planned obsolescence.
Yeah, engineered obsolescence, planned obsolescence. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can explode coffee, mate, man, come on. Look.
Well, everything's energy, I mean, right? Wouldn't you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Definitely.
Yeah,
without
a
doubt.
It's a matter of getting it to go into different transitional states, you know, finding its natural pathway and then utilizing it and kind of riding the wave, so to speak.
Well, not to go too far down the rabbit hole, just think of John Hutchinson's work.
Yeah.
Hey,
in a way, that kind of, you know, you're talking about Stanley Meyer earlier and the kind of trifecta idea of using photonic energy or lasers and then using high voltages and then using radio frequency is kind of the trifecta. John Hutchinson kind of did the same principle, so...
All right, let me give you an example here, and this drives me insane. I listen to people all the time talking about how, you know, this can't be done and that can't be done. These same individuals will go to the store, and they will buy a pre-made TV dinner, you know, and they'll pop it up in the microwave, they'll push the little button, you know, and everything cooks, and they ain't got a clue on how that even freaking works, man. Water is a dipole molecule. When you hit a dipole molecule with a wave, it doesn't matter whether it's a fast wave or a slow wave, that water molecule is going to wiggle. All right? Now, you hit it with a super fast microwave, as those peaks up and down are going through there, it's rocking that molecule back and forth so fast that it's literally creating friction which in turn creates heat. Now, if you can get friction and heat out of water, then that's an amazing feat in itself. So now you've got these water molecules rapidly rubbing up against each other, creating friction, and in turn creating heat, which is cooking your doggone food. And you pull it out of the microwave and get a piece of hot cheese on your chin, and it puts a blister the size of a football. Come on. Yeah, there's some technology going on. There was heat coming up out of that sucker that it didn't stop from the microwave. You pulled it up out of there, it's steaming, and you take a bite of that and the cheese drips down on your chin. Now you got a blister, it's still burning your face. So tell me that there isn't something going on there. You got some super space age technology in your kitchen, and you're standing around telling me about the laws of physics. Come on, lady. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Well, even deeper than that is what goes into that TV dinner to make it so you can actually put it in the microwave and it cooks properly and stuff like that. You know, that's
Just think about the injection, the injection molding that made the little tray that the food's actually set in. There's some serious math went into making that mold. There's some serious technology. If people could only start from finish, I like that show on TV that shows how it's made, and they take you step by step through the process of how things are made. I wished everybody in school would have to watch these videos on how things are created, because then their little brains would be ticking, you know, the gears would start turning. Hey, you know, if you can do this with that, then I can do this with this. And that's what the whole pop boat contest was to begin with. It was to get people out of that box, thinking for themselves and doing the things that I know are, and everyone here I'm sure the night, every single one unites, will agree that if you're thinking outside the box, then things get created, you know.
Yeah, that's the driving force of all life is creativity and imagination.
Well, we've got the technology.
So, everything you see around you that's, you know, well, at least man-made or human-made, to be PC, everything you see around you was a thought before it ever came into form, ever into existence. It was somebody's thought or idea. So,
one guy made $1 million off of a little tiny tip freaking piece of plastic that he stuck on the end of your shoestring from keeping it to get frayed out, man. How many people even know that?
Or post-it notes. There's all kinds of examples.
Yeah.
But then it comes down to, you know, money. And so our social sciences are really lacking in comparison. I mean, we have politicians, right, who have no idea about sciences and any sort of science, really. Basically, their primary motive is just to make more money and procure more money and, you know, to secure resources or money or whatever.
What scares me about...
But they have very little understanding in any type of scientific field, especially social sciences, which is something that you think that they would know a lot about, you know, to help society.
What scares me about what you just said is the visual in the back of my mind that tells me, like, there's a science guy. He's doing all this research for a big university. He comes across something, you know, and suddenly one of the big wigs walks up behind him and says, "Overlook that." Why? It could be free energy.
I think that's kind of what I'm getting at is, you know, our social sciences are not applied, and they're very much just ignored. Like, you know, economy is basically, it's just a social structure, and that's why you put socioeconomic together, because the economy is attached to what our social structure is. So if right now our social structure is basically an idea of supply and demand or scarcity, and it kind of separates the entire world from itself, I mean, as far as people go. I mean, and actually even nature, because we're a part of nature, even if you don't think that you are. I mean, you are. And the idea that we can somehow just through brute force just be able to conquer and dominate the land is kind of short-sighted. It's, you know, it's very much in mental parameters. It's not looking at it as like your part in the universe.
Well, and I think that's why we scare these folks so bad, because they know that if any of our ideas actually get out there and people start paying attention, that their wallets are going to get a bit thin. You know, like, let's say we design a solid state motor that can't you don't have any moving parts, they're going to be a little bit upset about that whole process, because now the average Joe with junk can put together something that they don't have to buy something, you know, and replacement parts and so on.
Right.
So with that I think that somebody needs a coffee break, so I got a few tunes in line if everybody wants to go refresh and come back and hit the table hard again.
Sounds good
to everybody? All right.
Sounds good.
Everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights of Roundtable. Peace and love.
Whee!
don't understand. Gotta get away from him. See, I guess you just get my feet on the ground, waiting for the sun to appear.
You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We've got some amazing things in the works. So with that said, let's hop back into it. Who wants to jump on the bandwagon first? Don't everybody rush to the mic at once. You'll chip a tooth.
There we go. We got Dublin.
I'll go. I just thought I'd give you some guys some mats to chew over. You know, well, the first one that everybody should know is that in 2 days of sunshine that hits the planet Earth, that's more energy than all the known fossil fuels on the whole planet. So a huge amount of energy is wasted on heating up the whole planet, just so that everybody gets an idea of the sheer scale of waste of energy that's out there. Because all that energy that's hitting the Earth, we're not tapping into it with solar power as well as we should be. So, I mean, it's a huge amount of energy. But that's just a side issue. I want to get back to the problem of hydrogen production and for the car. I've put in the chat box there a link to where they got a 1969 7-liter engine from ran it and tested the efficiency and tried to see could they get an improvement in MPG from putting in hydrogen. But what's most interesting about the report is it shows how much fuel is wasted. It's the engine's only 5%. What most people don't realize is that 80% of the fuel is thrown out of the engine into the catalytic reactor. And there's a very important reason why that happens, but I won't go into that right now. As a little side thing, if your catalytic reactor gets too much fuel in it and it burns too much, it gets too hot. And if you ever see it go blue and streaky, that meant it got too hot and it's wrecked. So if you're ever buying a second-hand car, look at the color of the stainless steel on the catalytic reactor, and if it's got all streaky colors, particularly blue color, forget
burnt,
it.
Burnt metal cooked. Color.
It's goose is being cooked. And that can happen very easily when you can get shock load as well. That'll usually show up. If you drive through a big river or a puddle and you super cool the shock cool the catalytic reactor, it will, when you come out the other side, it'll probably also show up later on. It'll be blocked up, show up in it, some color will change. So that's a side joke. The reactor. The real thing to know about a car engine is the incredible small amount of energy that it does with each piston stroke. And I've done a spreadsheet where I look at how many miles to the gallon, how many grams per second go into the engine, and how many grams of fuel get burnt in each explosion. And it's a roughly, it's about 0.01 of a gram of fuel goes into each explosion, and it's about 730 joules of energy, which is about 1/20th of a watt for each explosion. So it's quite a small amount of energy in each explosion. Now, what most people don't realize about hydrogen production is, if you decided tomorrow to say, okay, I'm going to run my engine on hydrogen, which, you know, hydrogen and oxygen, which you can, Brown's gas, it takes about 50 times more power than the fuel to make hydrogen. I'll explain roughly how that works. It takes 2,200 liters of hydrogen to replace 1 liter of gasoline. So you can see you need a vast amount of hydrogen to replace gasoline. However, based on the fact that with an engine you're throwing 80% of it out the exhaust in gasoline, well, in hydrogen you probably don't need 2,200 liters. You can do with 1/20th. But the problem with hydrogen is it takes about 200 watts of energy to make 1 liter of gasoline, plus or minus. I mean, I've seen as low as 100 is claimed, but everywhere it has to be about 200 watts of power to make 1 liter of hydrogen. So if you're gonna run your car on hydrogen and oxygen, say you put it in a tank, store it, and drive off with it, you would need to be generating at least 10 times as much power than what you would be getting from the, so you'd need the equivalent of 10 liters of gasoline to make one the equivalent of 1 liter of gasoline in hydrogen oxygen. So, you can see you've got a big problem in production there.
So with all Dublin, then what Justin was talking about earlier about redesigning the motor itself. If you take a pneumatic, like the doggone, what do they call those doggone things at the, where they take the air tools that they take your tire off at the doggone shop.
Pressurizer.
Yeah.
Like the air cars. They got a couple of air cars out.
Yeah. Rotary engines and, you know, using that technology, it doesn't take as much to turn that doggone thing around. You can see how much torque you can get and how many RPMs you can get out of just an air tool alone. Imagine you focus that doggone explosion from that hydrogen inside a combined system like that, to where, you know, those little fins inside there being spun around at an alarming rate. You see what I'm saying? You wouldn't need as near as much energy to get that thing going as you would be when you're talking about a piston. You're talking about when you push that piston down, it has a bearing on the end of it and it's actually turning the shaft, so you're actually getting the piston itself is actually taking, it takes more to actually turn that piston, whereas one of them air tools, the way that the pneumatic motor's designed, doesn't take near as much pressure in order to force that thing around. You see where I'm coming from?
Oh yeah, there are a few engines on the market. I've seen them, well, not so much on the market, that have been invented that look more like these tools that you're referring to, in that the engine goes around in a kind of a circle with pistons going kind of this. The pistons are shaped in a kind of a, how would I call it, like if you took a cylinder and you bent it slightly so that it can go around in a circular piston kind of way. But the thing is, I'm just trying to outline, you know, somebody says tomorrow, yeah, I want to run my car on hydrogen, I'm going to make it a solar panel, I'm going to store all the hydrogen in a bottle, and then I'm going to run my car. They need to know that they're going to have to produce at least 10 times more energy than what the, you know, if say 1 liter of fuel produces, I think about 36 megajoules, or 36 kilowatt. They're going to need 10 times more kilowatts than that to produce each liter equivalent of hydrogen.
Essentially what those folks are attempting to do is put a zoot suit on a turkey, you know, and we're talking about, you know, that's not going to work.
Now, I will agree that when you're dealing with H2 or hydrogen, it does take quite a lot as far as the gas goes to equate to gasoline. But on another note, I think the whole engine needs to be redesigned to work with hydrogen. And then it would not take near as much, because, like Shazia says, you're putting a zoot suit on a turkey. You know, you can't polish a turd.
Better than a pool.
Yeah.
But another note,
mathematics can show you. Mathematics is brilliant. It can show you something that you kind of hadn't fully understood. That just how awfully inefficient the petrol car or the gasoline car or the diesel car is, you know, the engine is certainly.
So I think
it's not a good candidate to work with this technology. And as far as HHO goes,
yeah,
it's a very special gas. It's not just H2O2. There are isotopes of deuterium and possibly even tritium that's inside of this gas.
Now, is it somewhat semi-corrosive, though? The HHO gas, I mean, you have some corrosion factors, right? Because if you're using caustic and stuff like that.
Well, those can be basically cleaned out. I mean, the gas itself, once you pass it through a condenser and through a bubbler and through a filter system,
you're dealing with pure gas, that caustic solution can be engineered to stay within the cell itself.
And it's just reclaimed, so you can use it again in the electrolysis process.
Well, I think that by designing a rotary-style engine using the pneumatic version, the way the pneumatic motors work, I think that you could get this reaction to happen so fast you wouldn't even have time for buildup.
I agree.
Now, there's a whole lot of these internet sites where they're claiming to get 50% more miles to the gallon by introducing, say, 1.5 liters or 2 liters of hydrogen into the engine. Now, I've run the maths, and if you run each piston stroke at 1.5 liters per minute production, it's something like 1/25,000th of the each piston stroke is including this hydrogen. So unless there's some sort of unknown process going on, the amount of hydrogen going in can't logically be causing that much of an extra better burn in the engine.
A lot of those sites will lie on the percentages. There's a lot of things you have to take in consideration when you're injecting this gas, and you have to change the whole burn process. HHO is a catalyst gas. It a very, very, very small amount injected into another hydrocarbon fuel changes the burn properties. People have to understand that.
Yeah, that
I don't care what anybody says. HHO is not just H2 and O2. It's a mysterious gas. There's a lot of fringes surrounded in it, but I've done the experiments myself. It doesn't take much at all.
This is what the mathematics is showing, that either if they are right that these small quantities of gas are doing this, then it must be some other action like catalytic. Now, the best theory I've got is one of the ways to make hydrogen is to put steam down a wrought iron pipe, a very hot wrought iron pipe. So the big passing steam through iron, which is a very high temperature, will generate hydrogen. So it's possible that even though it's small amounts of hydrogen going into the engine, it's hot, it's iron, and there might be a catalytic reaction going on similar to that, where more hydrogen is being generated inside the cylinder to help the explosion. I mean, it's only a theory at this stage, but by using the mathematics, it's starting to untangle the exact moment of the explosion in the piston in the engine, and is there these catalytic reactions going on, or is there something else? That's what I'm trying to untangle.
When I was talking about putting a zoot suit on a turkey, I was essentially trying to point out when you talk about trying to retrofit the existing machines out there, you've got a lot of things to take in consideration, because hydrogen does burn hotter than actual regular fuel. But the simple of the thing is, I've had a few times where my buddy, when he had his hydrogen cell, he didn't take in consideration the possibility of explosion, and whenever he had a flashback, it literally destroyed his cell. Because that's how much power is in Larry. That's how much power. I didn't know. Did Steve blow his up too?
Yes. Didn't have a flutter.
But I put mine where the actual top of it would actually be able to pop off. So if it got too pressurized, then it would pop off. But when the flashback occurred, the power that popped that sucker off, that deal hit the ceiling. That's how much power. And so if you take away the turkey out of the equation and you just redesign the engine itself to where you're using that amount of power and then recalculate the mass, I'm thinking you're going to like the math on that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, anyway, anybody wants a spreadsheet that I have.
You cut out there, Dublin. Did we lose everybody?
You can take the spreadsheet now. It's pretty, It's pretty primitive at this stage. If somebody could layer it, you know, with that program, Microsoft VB program, you know, where you take a...
You're in and out, brother.
A friendly way. Somebody's got the VB, they can do the VB, and I can't really figure it out. So, you know,
Well, I think we could take a look at those papers for you. So if you want to provide those and we get somebody else to do some math on what it is we're talking about, I'm pretty sure that you're going to be you're going to like the numbers that come up out of that deal, because, like I said, in the simple of it, hydrogen has a lot of power. If we redesign the motor to accept that power right from the get-go and, you know, basically send it on down the line through a transmission into whatever, you know, whether it be a generator running an electric motor or whatever, I think what we got going on is what we need to do is get past the turkey and go on to the new design, like the pop boat.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we covered today the subject of palladium and platinum being a catalytic reactor, so...
We lost you again, Dublin.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now, but...
Okay, the mathematics are suggesting that if we put a small amount of catalytic reactor on the top of...
Hey, Dublin, can you try to reconnect?
Hey, Dublin.
Okay.
Oh,
God
damn it.
Oh! Yeah, now, no, you hear me?
No, you keep cutting in and out. We want to hear what you got to say, because it's good stuff, but we keep losing you in the middle of your deal.
Okay. If we put...
Hey. Can we see if we can try to reconnect Dublin? Freshen up the deal.
Sorry, Dublin.
Okay.
I just dropped him. I'll bring him back.
All right. Well, as soon as you get him back, let me know. But in the meantime, so Justin, what do you think about the whole redesign, the engine thing there?
I think that is the most mature way to go about doing it, for the simple fact.
Oh man, now we're losing Justin.
Just like with my catalytic heater design, you know, people are like, the math doesn't work, or the pop boat, the math doesn't work. Well, I haven't seen anybody try to build it, so where are you getting your math from?
Well, my deal on the pop boat was, if you actually take and scale up the little crappy one that I put together, it's like 2 feet, almost 2 feet long. And it's heavy, because it's not even dynamic through the water. I mean, I didn't take no pride in putting it together whatsoever. But if you watch that video, you can clearly see that sucker's moving. So few modifications, especially on like what you're talking about, and that sucker will hum in the water.
I think it will too. It's just a matter of building it. I'm more of a nuts and bolts guy myself. It's like, you know, let's build the stuff, and then...
Oh, we lost you again. Hey, Cultus?
Get in and build it.
Cultus, you there?
Yep.
For some reason, this call keeps dropping in and out.
Not on my end, dude. So maybe we need to fix you.
Yeah, dump me and then call me back. All right. Well, in the meantime, while we get that situated, you know, like I've been saying, you know, this come from a little simple idea, and we've talked some really high tech stuff going on there, and so You know, with that said, I'm going to go ahead and throw on a quick tune because we're having some sort of technical difficulty with the dog.
It's coming through the player quite nicely, dude. So,
all right, cool. Well, let's keep rolling then. Can Justin
rolling?
Go ahead, Justin. Try it again. Yeah, I don't hear Justin now.
Can you hear me? Am I coming in all right?
He's right.
Yeah,
now
I got you. Keep going.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say that until we actually build some of the stuff, we really can't draw any mathematics on it because it...
Yep, it dropped again. Ugh! All right.
Am I coming in clear to everybody else?
Well, you're probably coming in clear to everybody else. Somebody's going to have to dump my call and then reset it. And I'm going to go ahead and throw a tune on so that we can get this situated. All right. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned. That's right, it's King Shazuz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table, and King Shazuz the Terrible rules with an iron fist, so all you gremlins out
made
there,
jello.
Get made of jello, I heard it. all you gremlins out there giving us tech problems, lay it, knock it off, or I'll send my knights out to muss up your hair or something. Alright guys, we're back, so where were we? King Shazuz the Marshmallow.
Palladium.
Alright, platinum and palladium. Expensive materials. Well, you know, there's a little bit of platinum on the little platters that, in your hard drive, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Actually, we found out that nowadays there's not as much of that as there used to be, because we were going to try to rip that out, too, and make fuel cells or even this catalytic combustion process. But we found out that they're not putting maybe 5-10% platinum palladium on those things now. It's amazing.
Well, if you need any old style hard drives, I'm sure I've got a few laying around.
How old?
I know the old ones are supposed to be full of it.
Yeah. Are we talking like the old orange giant discs, or are we talking like, you know, just like the hard drives from the 90s?
Yeah, the 80s and 90s.
I think 80s and 90s, I think, had some of those precious metals on them.
Okay.
But they're getting to be cheapskates, man. They want to, like, make everything out of freaking plastic and styrofoam, so you got to keep on buying, you know? Hey, that's a conspiracy, man. I'm just saying, you can't sell no drugs if ain't nobody sick. You can't sell no bullets if ain't nobody going to war, and so on down the line. So, you know, I said it.
I think that's pretty logical. I don't think that's a conspiracy at all. It makes sense to me. I mean,
so right, we've got planned obsolescence. Why not? Yeah. Why not, you know? Conspire to make sure we sell other things as well. Yeah.
And so I say, like Justin said, let's build it. Let's just do it. And we build a boat, a solid-state motor, using all these combined technologies. And then when we got a boat out there that the average Joe can put together that needs no moving parts and very little maintenance, if any, then, hey, you know, somebody will have to take note there.
See, this is the thing, you know, poor Tesla had didn't have one thing that we've got now. And can any of you guess what that is?
The internet. If he had the internet, it'd been a done deal.
Exactly. We have the ability to show a million people something, and what has been seen can't be unseen. This is why I'm so big on free sourcing, because we've all seen what happens when you try to patent something. You either get bought out, or you just mysteriously go missing.
Yeah.
So
the military has outright patents on everything. Whatever country the patents put in, the military, the government is obligated to take whatever they want.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
so
a lot of individuals
try to do the whole patent road and you know, do it that way. Just if you come up with a winning deal, just put it on the internet. Show us. We will make sure that stuff is spam. Like it will reach every other research that's out there, you know, and once it's been seen and it's in a replicatable form,
well,
they can't take it off. They can't take it off the people.
A lot of people
in the long term, it'll demolish the concept of a monetary system too. When you can create energy very cheaply, with resources
exactly,
cheaply, and be able to desalinate water or whatever it is you need to do, heating. That's a huge one, like we were talking about earlier.
Well, a lot of people that go down the U.S. patent road either end up having a heart attack, and I would have a heart attack too if I had a touch of lead poisoning. But I'm just saying.
What do you say about widgets? Widgets, is this?
Yeah, you can't sell a widget if everyone owns a widget.
Exactly.
But, you know, there is money to be made in the alternative energy. It's just you got to be a little bit more wise about the way you do it. Like, for example, not everybody has the capabilities to actually build this device. And so, you know, hey, the designs out there, you can either take the designs for free and you can build them yourself, or you can hire one of us with some tools and we'll build it for you, you know. And so it's not like you can't get paid on the deal. It's just whenever you try to bring it into the corporate structure, and these guys are saying, wait a second, if I allow cultists to sell this design, then I'm not going to have as much money as he is, and I don't like that, so I'm going to see if I can buy him out.
I look at it like this. If I was a millionaire, and one of you boys came up with an alternative energy device that worked, and were willing to give it away to the world for free, I would easily cut you a check for $1 million. Now, having said that, okay, I'm not a millionaire yet, but if I think like that, now I know some people who are a little bit better off than I am, I can guarantee, and I will put my name to it, that there are people out there who exist who, if you do this, would, no shadow of a doubt, cut you that check for $1 million.
I would be one of those.
And say,
what's a better payment? What's a better payment? You know, a collection of material things, or a or you know, freeing the people from survival.
Yeah. Just think of it like this, man. If everyone who had an interest in the deal put a dollar in the pot, that's a whole lot of dollars. That could actually get something done. And so, you know, here on Shazoo's Radio, we don't ask for anything, but, you know, the folks all the time are offering things, you know, such as Mark Dancy and them taking care of the Virtual Labs website, and Ken putting it together. We're taking time out of our own times to do exactly what it is we're doing, because once this technology's out there, it's going to benefit you to the extreme, because if you're not paying, like in the last couple of months since I moved into this new house that I got, and the unit that actually heats the house is so inefficient that I got a $600, $700 light bill for 1 month. That's a killer for your average Joe. And so with that said, if I got something that would put that energy in there for me, then, you know, I'm not paying the man. I'm paying myself. And so, you know, whatever you do to, even if it's only one solar panel you put out there to supplement what you've already got, that's one less dollar going into the man's pocket, and that's one more dollar in your pocket. And so with that said, the financial outcome, you know, you could go two ways. You could either try to take it into the corporate world and get a patent to protect yourself, or you can let that out there get open source, and then when you got this thing going, you got potential of finances coming from all different directions, from, you know, new designs to improvements on the old design, you know, patent the part to fix the deal. You see what I'm saying?
I agree that there's a lot of money to be made with just the design of, just like with the open sourcing of the catalytic combustion process. It's a well-known effect, but applying it to hydrogen and H2O is pretty new.
Yep.
And so I felt it was better to open source that, and actually I'm seeing that even though we open sourced it, there isn't a lot of people that have really taken hold of it and done a lot of experiments, but it's going to come to the point where, you know, I can't build 7 billion HHO catalytic heaters. And so the market is huge as far as the energy market goes. So you can open source something, but the thing is who's going to build the better mousetrap?
Yeah.
You know, that's the actual device is where the money's at.
You.
Okay, if collectively people come together and build a, you know, you bring their minds together and build something that's, you know, doesn't need, you know, essentially, like you're talking about the pop-up bullet, solid state, and can run for years without, you know, any interchangeable parts. You would be getting rid of the engineered obsolescence, and in doing so, you know, you're not really making a good business model. But what you are doing is, you know, progressing humanity forward into an age where we, you know, everybody is equally able to survive.
A simple little concept to consider is, you know, if you're a good baker and you can bake an awesome pie, you know, you make that pie, you obviously, unless you're kind of greedy and you know, want to pig out or something like that, you can cut that pie up into several sections and you still get your pie, and everybody else gets some pie too, so... You know, that's why I'm not even remotely worried about giving my ideas away. I'll give them away as fast as necessary to benefit society, because I know that piece of pie that I just stuck out there for everybody else is going to come back to benefit me in the long run via I don't have to pay a doggone $600 or $700 light bill to live in the comforts that I'm accustomed to. You see where I'm coming from? So, with that said, don't worry about you're not going to be able to make no money, because I guarantee you, when this ball gets rolling, everybody will get a piece of the pie. We're not trying to sell anything to anybody. If the faster you give something away, just think about this. If somebody went out and they give all the farmers all the seed that they could possibly use in a growing season, I mean, they just gave it away. Look how many seeds are coming back to society via that one little deal. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and here's what we were talking about earlier about changing the whole engine, right? Well, why can't we do that with society? I mean, I know that's some strong terms. You know, I'm basically saying revolution, but revolution without the R is evolution. You know, so
if we don't have to operate. It doesn't.
Let's look at the word revolution. What does revolution mean?
Revolves.
Cycle.
Yeah, and it goes around and finishes where?
Back where it started.
Right where it started.
Back where it started, that's right. And as a human race, we need an evolution, not a revolution. You're dead right. We need to step up a level, not go around in a circle and end up back where we were, which seems to happen every time we have a revolution.
And I think that's what we're doing right here on the Knights of the Round Table, is we're evolving, because look at this, guys. I've said this a million times. I got a lot of skills and talents and knowledge that I've acquired, but I don't have near the combined skills and talents and knowledge that all the people of the world have. And so we're bringing these brilliant minds from all different nations together. And we started off with, like I said, something simple as a little toy from the 1900s. And we evolved that toy into a high-tech piece of machinery that could outlast your house, you know. and isn't that what everybody needs? You know, they always talk about recycling. They always talk about conserving, but they never put their money where their mouth is. They haven't solved the whole so-called global warming crisis. What they're trying to charge you to breathe, for Pete's sake. All right, you exhale CO2, and so it's going to cost you to breathe, literally. You know, via the taxes and all the other stuff. When right before our very eyes, our existing technologies that fall all the way back to 1800s and probably even all the way back to the Egyptians themselves. Justin kind of touched on about the pyramid, how when you look at the pyramid in its actual design, it could have been a hydrogen generator for all we know. There wasn't no soot up the wall of the pyramid like they would use torches. They had to have a lighting system. There's a inscription on the wall that looks kind of similar to the Edison light bulb. And so, with that said, stepping back and look at the picture, common sense dictates if we keep going down the same road that we're going, and we let these guys be in charge of telling us what we got to pay for and not pay for, before too long, we're already paying for water, we're already paying for to breathe, and we're paying astronomical amount of money just to stay warm in the wintertime, when, like Dublin said, the amount of energy that comes off the sun one day, it is amazing compared to how much is actually on the planet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and our current solar panels, I mean, they're the best out on the market. Maybe, you know, 18% to 26% efficiency, you know, and then we're talking about the new state-of-the-art, like, nano-layer, mono-layer, crystalline. I can't even remember what it's called exactly. If you look it up, it's, you know, it's not really that high. That's because it's only catching the energy. If you look at, you know, radiant energy, it's only catching the energy from the chromatic spectrum of light. It's not even getting
a very small frequency.
Yeah, exactly. It's not getting thermal. It's not getting ultraviolet. It's not getting
imagine if they threw the thermal in there on that same solar panel. If you took a solar panel, and I don't know if you've ever went out and felt the back of a solar panel after, you know, it's been on all day long, you know, the heat's been building up on it. Imagine a whole bunch of Peltier elements glued to the back of that doggone that solar panel, you know. And then on the back of those deals there, you have some, what do they call them, doggone things that's on your processor and your computer? Heat sinks.
Heat sinks.
Yeah. So now you got now you're taking some of that waste energy and producing yet even more energy, and you could take it even further and heat your water with it as well.
Well, you can also do you can do a Tesla and take a insulated you know, electrophorus material and puts out there, you know, it can act as your heat sink, and it can also take in, you know, the higher frequencies of light that can't penetrate through it.
Yeah.
Like, ultraviolet.
And you take these... You take these newly designed solar panels and you pump them into huge battery banks, and then you pump that into freaking on-demand hydrogen technology with a new rebuilt motor, and now you got a free energy device that would run 24/7 no matter whether the sun was up or down. And if you needed a little bit more backup on top of that, then you throw some wind turbines up there to keep those batteries continuously charged up no matter what's happened. And if the wind isn't blowing, then you tap into the dirt itself, because you can get electricity out of the dirt. I did a video on it, you know. So with that said, somewhere around you you got a creek running or a river, you know, you tap into that energy. And so if you took all these things in conjunction with each other, you would have such an efficient energy power grid that it didn't matter what happened outside of a massive solar flare overcharging the system. But then in that case, you take that same power grid and you put safety deals inside there, because Coltus had a really awesome breakout in one of his videos, one of his Tesla coil videos, where you can see where the power was so immense it was literally breaking out the side of the doggone thing, and it was incredible. But if you could drain that energy off as fast as you're coming in, you got a solar panel or a solar flare coming in, you call everybody up or get on the news and you say, look, we got a massive solar cell in there. Can everybody go turn every single appliance they got on, please? And so everybody goes around, they flip on all their lights, they flip on all their deals. When the solar flare hits, all that extra energy is absorbed by the inefficient crap that they keep selling in the store. Hey.
I agree, and I think that at the end of the day, this revolution that we call it, I think it's got to start with people like us. The corporate world is not going to give us this stuff, and I think the only way we're going to get it is if somebody out there, a group...
Well, brother...
With your virtual labs, I think that's the perfect candidate, but...
Brother,
I think we're going to have to build this stuff ourselves.
Brother, you came to the right place, because we agree with you 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt. This is what we put our money where our mouth is. Each one of us have something invested in this whole deal, and the outcome of this deal is going to benefit all of humanity and ourselves at the same exact time. So that's why we're on here shouting. That's why we're on here being attacked, because those folks, they're getting scared. I'm telling you, they know we're on it, and we're not going to stop. We've got multiple networks, and so if they take down one network, we'll just pop up another one, and then another one after that. And we've got other networks coming online at the same time, because what we're saying is exactly what everybody wants. They're fed up, you know. The whole system is flawed, and we're not going to try to attack the system. We'll let it do its own. It will let it have its own natural death, so to speak. While we just build this stuff, and we share it with one another, and we keep on bringing people together from all nations, and outside of a massive calamity where these guys beat us to the punch and get us into World War III and screw it all up to begin with, you know. Even after that, man, if I still have a solar panel, or I still have something I can plug into the dirt to get power, we'll keep on broadcasting the same doggone show over the radio waves, because you can do that as well.
Well, nothing else. You're spreading awareness, and people are maybe thinking about certain certain things they can attribute, you know.
And while we're sitting here talking, there's people out there listening, and their minds are ticking. They're like, dude's right. I mean, heck, with what he just said and with what I've been working on, we can make it happen. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it's going to take, is just, you know, the average Joe putting this stuff together from junk parts and making it work. And once one of us finally puts something together that works,
well, the key,
the dam is broke.
The key is going to be this. The key is what we keep on saying. Coltus says it, I say it, everybody says it. You know, you tell your friend. If you believe in what it is that we're doing, you tell your friend. Tell his friend. And when everybody comes over there and we're putting our money where our mouth is, and actually see this virtual labs online and actually see things, imagine how much time that they will save without having to go through the YouTube nightmare when you go to doing research and you go look up a video and some guy's got batteries hidden in there and saying, hey, I found free electricity, you know. That's not going to happen where we're standing. And you'll be able to look in my lab real time, and you'll be able to distinguish whether I'm a BS artist or I am really on to something, and you'll be able to ask me questions real time, and we'll be able to get things accomplished. If you see something in one of my videos that you need in your lab to accomplish your goal, you just send me a message. I'll send it in the mail. For Pete's sake, the faster you get done, the faster I get done. You see what I'm saying? That's what
exactly,
we're on.
Exactly, and we're doing the catalytic combustion, the process that I stumbled upon. We got our own little forum set up. That's sort of what we're doing. If one of the guys is interested and doesn't have something, if we have it, we're just sending it in the mail. You know, sometimes free of charge, and that's what it takes is working together to make it happen.
Well, your forum, tell your forum guys to come over here and join with us, because we're, you know, like I said, we're all separate entities in itself. Like Awake Radio is still Awake Radio. No Borders is still No Borders. Shaziz Radio is still Shaziz Radio. We are a combined network of like-minded individuals who are at the point where we're saying exactly what you said. It's not going to get done until we do it. You know, you can't rely on some sort of representation to get this done, because their track record sucks. It don't take 30 years to solve the starvation in the world. It don't take 30 years to solve the so-called energy crisis. You know, we've taken the last two shows alone showed example of how you could take one little bit of basic science and expand on that basic science. Sure, the math didn't add up with just the one part alone, but you throw another part in there, such as the catalytic converter, and bam, you got something going on. Woo! I need to take a breath. Somebody else talk.
it's awakening, you know, of people, because we all share thoughts with each other, whether we're aware of it or not, right? So sometimes we share, you know, negative thoughts or things that are not very productive. But in this sense, like, if we all become aware of the things that we can do and we share the thoughts, then we can do great things together. So that's what I like about this stuff.
Well, I'm excited, and I'm glad to get Justin on here, because I've been wanting to get him on the show for quite some time, because I've been keeping my eyes on his videos, and the last video that I saw of him, he said something to me that I can't say it verbatim, but essentially is what we were talking about, is that if you step back and look at the system as it's going, it's ludicrous, because here's things we could do, but you can't get nobody to listen. And it's the way it is. So when we get to talking about doing the things like we're doing right here, I get so freaking excited, I'm ready to jump up and dance. You know?
I am too. It's frustrating too, because it's like, see all these things wrong, and people just don't want to listen to you. They don't want... It's like... I don't understand. It's like people won't... like. They don't want to do anything about the current state of events. It's so hard. You just want to shake people sometimes, because you see all these things wrong that we could have solved 50 years ago, and we keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yeah, and
what's
the
definition of that? Insanity.
Yep, and I don't think it's necessarily a case as they don't want to do it. They just think that it's so big, like me, myself, if I'm sitting here and I'm looking out into the world and I know it's screwed up, I got some solutions, but to get a platform for me to speak and everybody will listen is like pulling teeth. So they figure, you know, the problem's too big. And what I'm trying to tell them is the power of the individual is the example that we gave of them being that one gear inside the entire machine of humanity that makes the thing function. So their input and my input with your input together, we've got a well-tuned machine that works, you know, an engine that runs like a Swiss watch. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. That's the mindset of most people, that they're just too small and too insignificant to do anything about it, so they just
Well, and people get locked up in their personal lives.
Around and forget about them.
Hey, cultists?
To do that either. It's not hard to get locked up in your own little personal world.
Yeah.
Cultists, you still there?
Yeah, mate.
You said something that was really profound about ideas. Do you remember what that was?
Do you have any idea what it might have been?
Well, it essentially was on the scale of the here on Shaziz Radio Network and all these other networks that we're affiliated with. There's no such thing as a stupid idea. We want to hear your ideas. And that one idea is that one anomaly that can't be explained by the so-called laws of physics. That's what we're interested in. That's the key. That's the missing piece of the puzzle.
No, I can't actually.
Well, it was good when you said
it. I think
you
just said it, though.
Yeah.
I kind of disagree with you.
Well, you know, if you take a 500-piece puzzle, you can...
That's the one.
You can sit there and you can slam that 500-piece puzzle on the ground over and over and over again. Keep picking it up, slamming it on the ground. Sometime... In the laws of averages, and it's going to be sometime in the trillions, trillions, and even farther on down that, sometime you might just get lucky and that puzzle will land exactly in perfect, everything works out fine. All right? It's there. It's done. You know? But that's not, you know, I don't want to wait around that long to get this dang done. So what I want to do is I want to take all these ideas, all these anomalies, put them in conjunction with one another, get people actually working hand in hand, shipping each other parts, sharing every single idea they got. Even if they think it's a stupid idea, something in that idea was they didn't get that idea from nothing.
Someone else's mind, yeah.
Yeah, there was something in that idea that was worthy of them speaking out.
Yeah. Yeah, even if you've got the most, you know, in your mind, even if it's the most stupidest idea you've ever thought of that you think it is that way, voice it anyway, because you might just, as I said, trigger something off in someone else's mind that makes them think, oh, I didn't even think of that, but what if we do this? And then, you know, we are the combined minds, you know, just tonight, think about the things we've worked through, you know, as a team. That being said, along the lines of the pop-up boat, if you guys, it wouldn't make it solid state, but if you looked into like nitinol, I mean, you're dealing with temperature differentials. You know, nitinol is. Hey, I've seen the nitinol engine. I just don't know how we would go about using that as such. Yeah.
Well, I like back to the KISS deal again, keeping it simple, because what we're talking about doing is, you know, if a third world country, Mark Dancy said this, he was talking about how if they have one little small part break down, it takes them forever, if even possible, to even get this part and fix this doggone thing. And then they have to have somebody there who knows how to fix the doggone thing. But if we make these solid-state engines without, you know, high-tech stuff that people can't get their hands on, if the average Joe can put the sucker in the water, fire it up, and then run for years, imagine how much that would benefit them. Imagine if you can pump water with absolutely no electricity, and while you're pumping that water, create electricity and clean your water and get heat out of the whole doggone deal. I mean, dude, where is it? Where is the doggone energy crisis? That's what I keep asking.
Just scarcity. The idea of scarcity to keep a fear going, you know.
Well, yeah.
Oh, you might run out of this, so you got to buy my product, basically.
Fear fills up wallets. But let me ask you this: when's the last time you got the crap scared out of you, and then you ended up with a bunch of money in your wallet? Eh? But the guy on the other end scaring the crap out of you, he got you to pay for something, even if it was just the whole little trip through the spook house thing.
Yeah, you're buying into a certain thought process, you know.
Yeah,
that's basically what money is. It's just a thought that we've all adopted as a, you know, a way of, you know.
If you want to pay somebody,
you know,
some money,
goods.
If you want to pay somebody some money to scare the crap out of you, give my wife some money. She'll stand behind the curtain when you walk through the doorway. She'll jump out and boo you, and you'll scream like a little schoolgirl.
Maybe in your world, she's is.
Hey, I got it for free.
I don't even have to pay her money, and she'll do that for me.
Oh,
Deb, if
man.
You're listening, hide behind the next door she's is walks through.
No, don't do that. Don't, dude. I'm getting too old for that. Oh, hey, don't forget old King Shaziz the Terrible rules with an iron fist. You know what I'm saying? All right. Don't make me pull my man powers out. Flex my muscles and stuff. Hey, you got to laugh at it, guys. You got to laugh at it. Cause there's
you've really got two options with everything that goes on in the world, and that's laugh or cry. And, you know, I think most of us are pretty sick of crying, so, you know, have a giggle about it, move on, and see what you can do to rectify the situation.
Well, yep.
I sometimes I get mad, too. So.
Yeah. you see my fraudster assassination videos on YouTube, mate?
Well, Justin, when you get mad, focus that energy on completing your project, because once you're standing on the other side with an actual completed project and you can look over there and say, I told you so, you know, when somebody tells me and Cultus that it can't be done, that's just more motivation for us to see if we can or can't.
Heck yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And if it failed, you know, and you learned something from
yeah.
it. So. Then we only learned another way not to do it. It doesn't mean that we failed.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. The only good thing Edison ever said.
Yeah.
Make sure he didn't have a writer make that for him. I think he probably stole it off Tesla, actually.
Edison wasn't a very nice character, man. He liked to try to keep his as much as he could, and so he went out and did some pretty dirty deeds in order to try to keep his stuff rolling. But
he wasn't the only one. Lots of people have followed in those footsteps and who knows how long.
Well, you know what, guys? We're in the here and we're in the now. We have the technology, and like I keep saying, this is the time for us to shine, because we're the founding fathers of our mothers and our sisters, our children, our children's children's future on into the future. I keep saying that. I know it sounds crazy, but what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. And I, for one, want to make sure that my children grow up in a world that, when they go get educated, it's a real education. It's not some sort of indoctrination into believe what I say so that, you know, you do and pay me kind of thing. I'm going to teach you this, and I'm going to teach you that, and I'm going to give you the option to step back and look at all the information that I just give you, and then I want your response. What's one of these things that you think, from your own thoughts and your own creativity, you want to go with? You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
And thinking outside the box, when people looked at us from the past, you heard it, we were called tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists. They couldn't even get their doggone metals right. I mean, it's aluminum foil, for Pete's sake.
I keep my aluminum hat under my Cooper all the time.
Hey, man, stops the RF, you know?
Yeah.
Penetrating your brain.
So I actually did a video with called King Tinfoil. It's kind of mocking a few things. It was funny, but I had aluminum foil crown and I had aluminum foil scepter and everything, you know, because, you know, they're out there talking about tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy nuts. So, you know, hey, I almost take that to extreme. There wasn't nobody standing up to be King Tinfoil, so hey, I declared myself to be King Tinfoil.
It's only a derogatory term used to describe a critical thinker and try to discredit them. So
it's like pseudoscience.
Exactly.
Pseudoscientists and stuff. I mean, if you're presenting, some material of and researching something, and you are, you know, going through process of elimination, doing a scientific process, and finding if something works or not, even if you're not documenting it, some people work better just in their mind. They just do things differently. But if you're doing that, then you're contributing to science. So to say that you're a pseudoscientist just because you're not following a common model is kind of like, that's not very progressive as far as science goes.
Well, and you can weigh this in on a most profound way, you know. a lot of people are down on religion. A lot of people are down on science. But one thing they both have in common is one goes off of faith and the other one goes off of theory. And neither one of them can be totally 100% beyond a shadow of a doubt. I choose faith. That's my own destiny. That's my own life. So that's my own choice. I choose faith. And I also choose science because science will give me some sort of explanation via other people's research throughout the history of time. And what I've noticed throughout the history of time is those guys who stepped outside the box, those are the ones who actually were Tesla. Those were Einstein. Those were guys who everyone around them said, that guy's nuts. Why, he don't even comb his freaking hair, for Pete's sake. But that one guy put something in the hands of humanity that created immense power, immense thought. I mean, we're still talking about Tesla to these days. I mean, the guy was incredible. He was way before his time. He did things beyond what these guys out here in the so-called educated world, the laws of physics world, have even been able to explain to date. And so with that said, I like the outside the box better than I like the inside the box. It's crowded inside the box. You know what I mean?
Certainly is a little limited.
Yeah. And every time these guys get outside the box, there's some corporate junkie that wants to drag them back inside the box. Say, hey, I'll give you this money for your research. Just don't tell anybody about this portion of it, okay? I'm trying to make money, so that's what it is. You don't put the money in there, you'll get people to roll over and do the dirty deed, and then suddenly, you know, all of humanity just got screwed out of the best piece of the puzzle. And, you know, we're here to stay outside the box. We're here to take all the pieces of the puzzle that we know of and discover the ones that are have been in history that were suppressed or lost or whatever. We're here to combine those pieces of the puzzle together. And when we get done and we step back, the whole world will be able to see the entire big picture. And once Pandora's box is open, just like you said before, once that idea is out there, you can't sell a widget if everyone has a widget. So the man
what has been seen cannot be unseen.
The man upstairs, his time's a ticking. The guy up here in the ivory tower that's making billions off of your electric bill, his time's a ticking. And he's getting a little squirrely on it because he knows that the power of the people have spoken, man. Here we are.
Yeah, his time is nigh.
Your mind recognizes that it's limited, and you know it will die eventually. So it's, many times it holds on to it as long as it can. You know, if you have a spiritual connection to things and see like you said, the big picture outside the box, and you realize that, you know, you're infinite.
Yeah.
In a sense, I mean, energy just,
well, they said that according to the Big Bang Theory, they said that everything came from one little smaller than an atom pinpoint somewhere in space. Okay, maybe you're right, maybe that is exactly how it happened, but it takes three things to start a fire. You got to have a fuel source, you got to have oxygen, and you got to have an ignition source. What my question is, who lit the match? What lit the match? I want to know. You're telling me it all came from one little singularity, which to me sounds like magic. It all sounds like magic. If you look at the world, it's magical. I mean, it's a mystical world of epic proportions. A thermoelectric generator of just amazing proportions. A self-contained biosphere. There's more resources, more combined knowledge in this world that you can possibly imagine. To me, it's like a miracle. All right, well, who lit the match? What lit the match? That's the anomaly I'm looking for. And I'm seeing these anomalies in each and every one of the individuals that keep joining in at the Knights of the Round Table, and the listeners throwing links in the chat rooms, and all the different people coming in via YouTube, different Russ from RWG Research. I mean, he's got some amazing talents, man. You put that guy, Justin, Cultus, myself, Diadema, and Dublin in a lab with all the materials, and when we come up out of there, it's going to be better than anything you ever possibly imagined. Does anybody have any slight disagreement with that?
Not at all.
None at all. I'd like to see the day that some of us could come together and get put in a warehouse with just a fraction of what some of these corporate pigs have as far as finances go, just a fraction of the money and a fraction of the equipment, and I believe we could show some of these people up.
See, this is where I see the universe just provides exactly what we need. I'm moving to Indiana, which is dead smack in the middle of all of us.
Well, brother, well, okay.
All of you guys surround Indiana. We can fly someone in if we have to. That's all right.
You ever seen that show Junkyard Wars?
Oh man,
oh, yeah.
That'd just be the best.
If all of us right here get on that show, we will literally mop the other team. I'm telling you, guys. As much as I hate to say it, we're right down to the last few minutes, and so this is the point in the show where we go around and let everybody have their quick piece. But since we had such an amazing show, our time's limited. We're going to have to keep it short and sweet, so that I think Live Mike is coming up next, and I'm sure he's got something profound to share with everybody. So with that said, who wants to go first?
Well, we'll start off with Darden. We'll just go
all
right
this
list.
Well, thank you again for having me on. This is great, and I'm glad to meet you guys. And if you are interested in anything I'm tinkering with, then you can look me up at DIADON@YouTube. And thank you so much. Keep asking questions.
I'm a link kind of dude, so throw a link in the chat room, and I will, if I'm not already subscribed to you, I will rush over there and do so right away.
All right.
No worries.
Who's next?
Dublin.
Dublin, you there? Short and sweet, brother.
We'll jump over to Justin while we wait for Dublin to come.
Yeah, I'm here. Look, guys, brilliant stuff. I've put up the links to the HHO, and hopefully you got them all. And great show, and I'll see you again next Saturday and Sunday, okay?
Great.
Well done.
Looking forward to it.
All right, Justin.
Well, appreciate you guys having me on. It's very thought-provoking, and maybe I can come again sometime, but if you want to look me up,
hey brother, by you showing up today, you are
website, JDC products.
You're gonna have to run that by one more time because it cut out.
Say that again. You cut out on me too.
All right, run by again. Go your website.
It's www.jdcproducts.com. And my YouTube's JDC Products is basically where all my research goes into. And hopefully we can get some of this stuff done with this pop-pop boat.
Beautiful. All right. And down to me. So, as usual, peace and love to you all. And come check me out at cultus.weebly.com. You'll find links back to everyone from there. I'll piece together a couple extra pages for some of the new knights during the week, if I have time before I've got to shoot off to America. Other than that, to my crypto buddies out there, if you're interested in mining some real UBIT coins that are coming up, go to yourmine.org. And other than that, back to you, Shaziz.
All right, well, like I said, amazing show, and we need to add Justin and whoever else isn't already added into the Knights of the Round Table here on Skype. And Justin, just by showing up, that makes you one of the Knights of the Round Table. And everybody out there listening in, if you want to be a Knight of the Round Table, it's as simple as a Skype call. You just call in, you join in. We share our information. We agree to disagree respectfully, but the whole deal is to keep this thing moving forward, because we are about results, and you're going to see that with Virtual Labs, and you're going to see that in a video as old King Shaziz the Terrible is riding around in a scaled-up pop-pop version shouting, "I told you so." So, with that said, peace and love to everybody, and stay tuned. Live Mike, I believe, is coming up next, and I'll throw a few links out, and you guys throw a few links out in the chat room, and we're just going to sling links in all different directions to pertinent information. So if you're hungry for knowledge, you came to the right place. Peace and love. Tell your friends. Come join us. Take care.
Man. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. by hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Danny, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot.
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 It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right. Right.
Fulfills the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.